Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynncullenshow@gmail.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
Hey there. Welcome to a unfortunate anniversary, January 6th. It's commemoration got off to a extraordinary start with a speech by the rightful president of the United States, Joe Biden, who finally said forcefully what needed to be said. I'll give you a few quotes in case you missed it. I think it would have been better if the speech had been given like at news time, like at 5, so that it would have had, I think, more of an impact, although one can only assume that it will lead the newscast tonight anyway. Some of what Joe Biden said just an hour ago. You can't love your country only when you win. You can't obey the law only when it is convenient. You can't be patriotic when you embrace and enable lies. He went on to talk about Donald Trump. Never said his name, didn't need to. He said this. The president had not just lost an election. He tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power as a violent mob breached the Capitol. But they failed. Other things that President Biden said today, marking January 6th. We are living at an inflection point in history. We're engaged anew in a struggle between democracy and autocracy. And he went on to say that Trump and his minions, quote, could not be further away from the core American values. Few things that will, if Trump was listening, had to have just made him go berserk. Trump, Biden said this morning about Trump. He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president. And he went on and said he has done what no president in American history, the history of this country, has ever done. He refused to accept the results of an election and the will of the American people. And then the greatest line, if you ask me, Biden said, I will allow no one to place a dagger at the throat of democracy. Well, that remains to be seen, and that takes us to Merrick Garland. We have to ensure that Trump and his minions at all levels, not just at the low level of rioter, face consequences, face conviction, go to jail. Biden today, I will allow no one to place a dagger at the throat of democracy. We will make sure that the will of the people is heard, that the ballot prevails, not violence, that power will always be peacefully transferred. Hell of a speech. But it's action that we're needing. And I want to share with you some thoughts that were part of what I've gleaned from a piece that was in the Times today about preserving our democracy. And it's disquieting, because the piece is, because one of the points that it makes is something that we've certainly talked about in the past, that we don't have a real democracy. Never did. That's our Constitution that we claim to worship in a way. Our Constitution makes it impossible for us to have a true democracy where each person's vote counts the same as any other person's vote. That is not what we have by virtue of how the Constitution created a structure that gives more power to the minority often. That's not a democracy. So when we talk about preserving our democracy, we first have to come to terms with the fact that we do not have a democratic form of government. If we did, Hillary Clinton would have been president, not Donald Trump. Al Gore would have been president, not George W. Bush. Because Republicans don't win majorities of ballots cast in national elections. They've won only once since 1988. Think about that. They only win because of the Electoral College. And we have seen they win because of using the constitutionally mandated structures of our government, for instance, the U.S. Senate, which is a wildly undemocratic institution, with all those big, huge, square states up in the northwestern part of our country, with next to no population, being able to have two senators. While a populous state like California, New York, also gets just two. And so with the Senate, you have an extraordinary tilt to Republican power, but not with the imprimatur, I guess would be the word, of the people. And because they hold power in this undemocratic chamber, Senate, they were able to remake the Supreme Court. Yeah? Their president, Donald Trump, who most Americans voted against, who, if we had a democracy, would never have been in the White House, they took a guy who didn't win a Democratic vote. In 4 years, with the help of Mitch McConnell running the Senate, another undemocratic body, they remade the Supreme Court for generations to come. So the Republicans have long understood that they do not have to appeal to most Americans to win. They don't have to sell most Americans on their ideas. They just have to use the built-in head start that the Constitution gives them to hold power. And then we see what the next stage is, to then hold on to that power by dismembering parts of our government that pose difficulties for them. Like that pesky thing, the, you know, right to vote. So they create obstacles to vote. Obstacles intended to make it harder for people who don't vote for them to vote. And they're damn good at it. And this is why people say the coup continues, because they are busily at work, not in Washington, but in Harrisburg, in Albany, in this is where I should know more state governments, Lansing. They are busily at work making sure that at the lowest levels there will be people in place the next election that will not stand up to a bullying, illegitimate president who calls them and says, find me some 7,000 votes. So the Republican Party is an anti-democratic party, is now showing itself as an authoritarian party. And it has perfected, with a great assist from the founding fathers, a system to maintain power in a country that doesn't want them. If we were a democracy, then majorities of the people should be able to choose who the president is. That would be a popular vote. And if that were true, this would be a very different country. Because the people do want government that works for them. And the people would be electing Democrats. And the Supreme Court, because there would be Democratic presidents, would be a liberal body, even perhaps a progressive body. Here's a quote. Democracy matters, not because there's something magical about 50% plus one in any given vote, because it gives people the power to decide how they will live together. And if we don't claim that power, court or a minority government will always be pleased to take it off our hands. Think of it. And of course, there's no changing the Constitution now because, again, of the sort of rigged system. To amend the Constitution to, for instance, get rid of the Electoral College. I don't see how that's doable. And in that regard, you got to credit the Founding Fathers for coming up with a system, an anti-democratic system, that was able to protect itself from the people who might want true democracy. I'm sure today we'll be reminded over and over about things that were said, things that were done, things that were not done. But it is still just mind-blowing to revisit what some Republicans were saying in the hours and even days after January 6, 2021. I give you Senator Lindsey Graham. I recall hearing this in real time as it was the night of January 6th. And they were meeting very late into the night because, of course, they had been interrupted by an attempted coup. And Lindsey Graham, Trump's golfing buddy, Trump's enabler, he actually stunned me that night by saying, "Count me out. Enough is enough." That's fascinating because it wasn't even a week later that Lindsey Graham was back on Air Force One, sitting next to Donald Trump. So much for count me out, and enough is enough. Or the spineless Kevin McCarthy, who angrily on January 6th told the president to do something. And then, even a week later, said, he had more staying power than Lindsey Graham, said that Trump bears responsibility for what happened January 6th. And then, damn, if by the end, February hadn't even shown up, and McCarthy was down at Mar-a-Lago, kissing the ample ass of the orange lunatic. And there, the reason for these quick about faces is because the Republican base is in full thrall to Donald Trump. And if you say a negative word about him, why, get ready. Death threats, all kinds of intimidation, to be primaried, to lose your job, to take the wrath, full force, of this vengeful man and his vengeful minions. And so what we see is an extraordinary lack of political principle, of political courage, of character. What loathsome, dishonorable human beings. And they're willing to be seen that way. It just blows my mind. You try to figure out, how do people live with themselves? And I, you know, there are people who like actually try to answer that question, and it requires understanding human psychology. And it's something that autocrats use, human psychology. It's how they maintain power. Through fear, through creating a narrative that allows people to have a sense of grievance and victimhood, and to show them that you will stand for them. And autocrats have used the same game plan for ever. And because psychologists do research, we know that the most effective propaganda focuses on an appeal to group identity of some sort. And this is where trouble starts. There's an appeal to our group, and our group is being imperiled. And in the case of Trump's base, that group is defined as white Christians, pretty much. That's the group identity. White Christians. We could put in some more adjectives to flesh it out, but that's the big group. And we've learned that they are feeling that they are losing their status that they have always had. They've been on top. All of a sudden, there's a lot of brown and black people and uppity females, and they're showing up all over the place. Research has shown that Christian Americans who are told and who believe that Christianity is under attack become much, much likelier to embrace absolute falsehoods about American history or about politics. Once you're feeling, and you feel it in your bones, that your group is under attack, you are open. Even if you're educated, even if you got a high IQ, you are more open to embracing a narrative, a story, a so-called fact, a version of history that makes you feel better, you poor, aggrieved, white Christian. And that's what Trump, in his gut, understands. This incurious, corrupted, vile human being has this skill, this talent, to know how to appeal people's fears. And he has no shame in spreading outrageous lies, because he knows, again, he knows they work. A student of history, which Donald Trump is not, knows that lies work. The Nazis knew that lies work, and the importance of this constant onslaught of false narratives and propaganda. The reality is that history is constantly being rewritten, right? I mean, the story of American history, as I understand it, has changed over my lifetime. Got a lot more complicated, I'll tell you that. And so historians often rewrite history, saying, nah, you know, that isn't really, that was not right. This is what actually happened. And then activists, think of Black Lives Matter, activists rewrite history. Let's look at this from a different perspective, they say. And whoa, totally different picture and a different reality. And then, of course, politicians like Donald Trump rewrite history. And we know why that is, because it's the only thing he's got left. And so he'll keep coming with these brazen lies and historical revisionism. And he will be aided and abetted by technology and by Fox. Someone said we've got to stop saying Fox News. And that's true. It is in no way a news operation. In no way. It's flat-out fascist propaganda operation, and it should not be called a news operation or be treated like one. And the more polarized and divided population is, the more receptive, the more fertile the ground is to create these big lies and to have people latch onto them. Identity affirming falsehoods. You poor white Christians. And so what autocrats do, and what the Republicans are trying to do, and Fox is trying to do, is they are trying to re-engineer our entire memory, our collective memory, our narrative, our society, and they're starting at the most basic place. And that is what we see as our collective heritage. So I don't know. I don't know what to say. I, as you know, watching this in horror. this slow dismantling of something I had thought was silly, that I had thought was immutable, that I had thought was, you know, just going to be there. A country I recognized. A country that I sometimes felt great pride in. A country I sometimes felt great shame for. But my country. And this is, as President Biden said today, this is an inflection point. This is as important a time as this country has ever known. Because it's very survival. Is at risk. True risk. Ay, guys. All right, I think that's all I have to say about all of that, because otherwise I'm going to come unglued. Was it Franklin who said, you know, coming out of the Continental Congress or coming out of the, I don't, you know, what kind of, what have been asked by somebody, so what you guys doing in there and what have you given us? And is it he who said a republic, if you can keep it? Is that an apocryphal tale? Is that, did I paraphrase that out of, I'm sorry, I don't. No, but he didn't say a democracy, if you can keep it. And that's the one thing that I've come to know, and that gives me the most pause. And that is the founders' failure to truly believe in democracy. And it might finally becoming impossible to keep it because of the Constitution they gave us to keep what this strange form of democracy that has generally gotten us through, but clearly appears to be coming apart. I don't know. Okay. Let me see if I can find something else to talk about. Hey, did anybody see the video? It must just be, this is when you're in the Twitter sphere, that your head gets turned by stuff that turns out to be nothing, or certainly something that the major outlets don't deign to pick up. But did anybody see the video of Florida Governor DeSantis yesterday? It was at a regular kind of thing that governors have to do, showing up at some political event to hand out money to a county. And so he's standing at a lectern and he's reading from this script, and he is struggling on occasion to get his voice under control and to, it would seem, get air. I'm just saying. Anybody else see that? It seemed like he was having trouble breathing. And to see that, because it was odd. It's odd. It's not his normal speaking style. It's not his normal voice. He was in some kind of distress. And I don't think anything's been said about it, but this comes on the heels of him being so-called, like, missing for 2 weeks, right? There was all this talk about how with the surge in Florida and all hell breaking loose there and everybody else, where's the governor? And I guess it was said he was on vacation or something, but he was gone. And I'm wondering, because this is what I'm left to do. Did he have COVID or did he, does he have COVID? Does what the hell? I'm just saying. And I don't know if any of you saw it, but check it out. It's not like he's like, excuse me, but he's, something's weird. Just putting that out there for what it's worth. I'm also going to put out for what it's worth. And believe me, this is right out of nowhere. I spent much of my life loving musicals. I grew up on those great old, you know, Music Man and South Pacific and My Fair Lady and Oklahoma. I remember once my family went to New York and I saw 3 plays in a week. I saw one about Fiorello LaGuardia, the mayor of New York. It was called Fiorello and was delightful. I saw Gypsy. And I'll never forget Ethel Merman made her entrance by coming down the aisle, walking, as only Ethel Merman could. I was just blown away. She like blew right past me. And I also saw a non-musical. I don't know if that was the same trip, but it was Hamlet. That's not a musical yet. And that was starring Richard Burton. God! Richard Burton and the other person I really remember is the guy who played Polonius, who was Hugh Cronin. I'd have to look up to see who all the other amazing actors were. But yeah, so why am I saying that? I just realized the other day, because somebody was talking about West Side Story, and I realized that I don't know when it happened, but it happened over the last year or two. I don't like musicals. I don't want to watch them. And maybe it's because it's the new kind of musicals. It just doesn't speak to me as much. Or there's just something too silly. All of a sudden, it seems silly to me. That 1 minute somebody's talking, and the next minute they break in the song. Oh, no. And I remember, excuse me. I remember being stunned that there were people back when I loved musicals who would say something like that. It just seems really weird. All of a sudden, somebody just breaks into song. So I don't know what happened to me. I know one thing that happened, because I actually walked out of a movie, and that was La La Land. That was a musical, supposedly. And I thought it was so horrible Maybe that's where it started. I have not a clue. I just wanted to pass that on because I don't know. I don't know what happened. That felt like a big change. Here's another thought I had. God help you. I was thinking, again, doing a little, you know, sitting shiva for the word few, which I talked about the other day, how it's toast. It's gone. It is being ignored out of existence. But then I thought of something else that is gone. And I'm going to give you the word, but it's not the word that's gone. It's the whole concept that the word defines. And you tell me if I'm not wrong. For some reason, the word came to my head in regard to something, and then I thought, oh my God, put it on the endangered species list. Oh my God, and that is not good. And here's the word. Nuance. Nuance. In an age when media and politics and I don't know, everything seems to be suggesting that there's a right and a wrong. There's a yay and a nay. There are these two things, and they're the only things that get any attention. And when we have an argument, we talk about those two things. And then there's this whole stuff in between. That's the nuance. And we don't allow nuance. I blame media mostly for this. That you don't allow nuance to get into the conversation. You know why? Because it takes too long. And we're people who want things quickly. And when I worked in television, the time I had to tell a story got shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And you know what goes? Nuance. It's gone. There's no time to say things like, on the other hand, or, parenthetically, or including, or there's nothing. So things get jettisoned. And they can all be stuck. All those things that never get told, that never get airplay, that never catch someone's attention because they're never uttered, all of those things are nuance. Oh, man. And that is one of those red flags. That should tell us that we're not positioned well to take on the challenge that we face. Challenge of keeping this imperfect democracy we have. The bumper sticker writers have won. I'm sorry, I don't know what. Yeah, so when you hear somebody coughing, like, oh God, uh-oh, I don't know. Jonathan, thank you. Jonathan sends me something that Newsweek, which is a rag now, has written about the DeSantis thing. Speculation is growing about the health of Florida Governor DeSantis after he appeared to struggle to speak yesterday. He was in Kissimmee, Osceola County, to announce $10 million, and a video of the press conference shows his apparent difficulty in getting to the end of sentences. There has been no official confirmation that he has or had the virus, and Newsweek has contacted his office for comment. Somebody who saw it, who's a pulmonologist, one Dr. Stephen Brown said, "I've been a lung doctor for 35 years. To my very experienced eyes and ears, there is a respiratory issue here." His phrasing, limited breath support, and use of accessory muscles of respiration are telling. Doesn't confirm it's COVID, but something appears to be wrong. I don't know. I mean, it didn't look right to me either. Someone else saying he looked lousy, his chest heaved repeatedly. Another writer down in Florida said, "I'm not saying he has COVID. I'm just saying he disappeared for 2 weeks with no public appearances, and then he comes back breathing really funny." Yeah, something is weird. And I don't know. And it's not like we can wait for them to tell us the truth. But it's strange. Bob writes, "What I was doing last January 6th was, I saw Senator Chuck Schumer give a beautiful speech as the joint session, just after the session of the Joint Chamber of Commerce started to certify Biden's victory. I watched his speech on my way to see my mother at her house. Senator Schumer gave such a beautiful speech. I turned off my TV at my place with such hope and inspiration and a sense of peace. And then when I arrived at my mother's place, she and I were watching CBS's The Talk. However, less than a half hour into the talk, CBS broke in with news that Trump's base insurrected the Capitol." Now, there's a word. "Literally, as most of America did as they watched the breaking news, I couldn't move a muscle. It took me 20 minutes for me to do anything more than blink my eyes as I saw in amazement, but not in a non-surprising manner, what Trump's base was doing at the Capitol, holding it hostage. That night, I did something else most of America did in amazement of what happened that day. I drank my brains out. I drank my brains out to ease the pain of having a nation filled with so many, in Pittsburgh terms, jagoffs." Yeah. You know what I was? I had the TV on, but I had it on mute because I was doing a telemedical visit with my wondrous therapist who I talk to about once a month just to keep me so I have a place to vent. And I know you're thinking, what do you mean? You have a place to vent here. I'm listening to you vent Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You need a place to vent? Yeah, I do. So I was talking to her, venting, and I looked up at my TV screen and I started seeing, yeah, what was happening. And I said to her, "Jesus, what? See what's happening?" Well, she didn't, because she was being more serious about our session. I told her. And after a while, because I clearly was in no mood to continue talking about my issues, I said, I gotta go. And so I spent the rest of the day in actual disbelief. And if you think about it, the video we saw that day was not anywhere near as compelling as the video that we've seen since, that has emerged since from, you know, from body camera video, from other video that was taken inside and in the midst of and all of that. And yet what we saw was just unbelievable. It was as unbelievable as watching the towers come down. Trying to think of another moment when you're glued to a television and your mouth is hanging open. And yeah, the same disbelief and fear. And, you know, both were terroristic attacks on our country. And that we have an entire political party who we hear is going to retake the government in the midterms. Imagine that. That the Republican Party is not now a pariah in this country. A pariah. Oh, it's still very much in the game, and it is busily, busily working to change the rules so that it's going to not only be in the game, it's going to own it. And that we have this pariah party that is pretty much sitting out January 6th commemoration. That commemoration is the wrong term. Memory. I don't know. What is the word? What is the word where we do not forget? But it's amazing it's been a year. And our country is no safer. You hear that Amy Schneider was robbed? Who's Amy Schneider? Well, if you're a Jeopardy viewer, Amy Schneider is the current endless champ. Anyone who's listened to me talk about Jeopardy knows how much I am so sick. I get so easily unhappy when one person just keeps winning. And there's been a lot of that going on. Jeez. And Amy Schneider is currently the one. I missed yesterday. She's closing in on $1 million. One, I think, unless she got beat yesterday, but of course she didn't. but I got to tell you, she was robbed at, I think, was it at gunpoint? She lives in Oakland, and the victim said she was approached by two people, one of them armed, and they demanded her property, and she gave it to them because she's no dummy. So they ran off with her purse, her credit cards, her ID, and her cell phone. No arrests have been made thus far. So, yeah, I don't know, but I'm just saying. And then it said in the article I saw that Jeopardy wrote, "We are deeply saddened to hear about this incident, and we reached out to Amy to offer our help in any capacity." Now, these shows are taped. So what we're seeing now is the shows were taped at least 2 months, right, prior. So if Jeopardy's reaching out to her and she's back in Oakland, wouldn't that mean that somebody beat her at some point in the last 2 years? I'm trying to figure this out. anyway, I'm ready for her to move on. She's too friggin' smart. She knows absolutely everything, and it's annoying. And she's, you know, now they're like really into it. So she puts out like a blog or something after every show, and she like delineates everything she was thinking and what her process was. And I'm thinking, who? I don't know. I'm done. I am done. Just saying. Roger writes about Biden's speech this morning. You think Biden was poking Voldemort? The ass probably can't help himself to respond. Did outlets like Fox broadcast the speech? I don't know. Wouldn't they have to? Democrats need to go on these crazy networks just so they're not preaching to the choir. They need to go on a media blitz with these networks to attempt to reach the crazies. Otherwise, our democracy will remain in peril. You can't reach these crazies. I don't think. Oh, hey, have you been listening to the meteorologists who have nothing to do with meteors? I just want to make that clear. That's something we learned this week. Oh, my God. I happened to watch some local news last night. And it was, woo, it's going to snow. It's going to snow. They had all the, remember I told you the phrase evergreen in television news? Yes, there it was. The video of the salt trucks being filled. Yes, there it was. An interview with a, I don't know, hardware store owner who is all set with anything you could need. You need ice. You need shovels. You need sleds. We got everything possible. This is going to snow. And this went on and on and on and on. And the fact is it doesn't seem to snow here at all anymore, right? I, you know, all this faldy-roll and hoopla, and what are we going to get? An inch? Okay. What are we going to get? An inch? Two? Big effing deal, guys. Just saying. Lord. Oh, one other thing I just wanted to note. Barbara has quickly said, again, I'm not insisting that you like the movie, but an appreciation for what it's saying is in order. What are we talking about? Oh, don't look up. We just learned this week that the Thwaites Glacier in Antarctica is about to give way, allowing the West Antarctic ice sheet to crumble into the ocean, potentially raising sea levels by 10 feet. But I'd wager the news didn't get nearly as much traffic on social media as the news of Marjorie Taylor Greene's removal from Twitter. That is correct. Don't look up is supposed to make us squirm a little. It's supposed to mortify us. It's supposed to shame us for not taking an existential threat seriously enough. And I seriously hope enough of us took the message to heart and are prepared to make some changes. That doesn't mean rejecting our pursuit of happiness, but it means that when it's time for adult swim, we get our war faces on and achieve some big things. Anyway, I love that movie. I mean, I, again, said it was too long. It could use some editing, blah, 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 blah. But I thought it's a good send up of where we are as a society. It's good. And I would think most of you would enjoy it. And because I'm almost out of time and maybe, in fact, are, I just want to note something that is going on. And I'm sorry it took me so long here, but something's going on at NPR. They are bleeding their black employees and minority employees. Audie Cornish, who's been there forever, became the most recent. She's the host of All Things Considered, one of their major shows. She's a black woman, which I did not know. She's leaving. And it's, she doesn't have anywhere to go as far as I can tell. She just said, I'm ready to stretch my wings, try something new. Tomorrow's her last day. Goodbye. And prior to her, Noel King, who was also a host, he left. Also, Lulu Garcia Navarro left. Somebody from the New York Times tried to get in, get to Audie Cornish's co-host, Ari Shapiro, for some comment. And he said, I'm unavailable, but I would refer any journalists to NPR's communications department for comment on, quote, why we're hemorrhaging hosts from marginalized backgrounds. And then he tweeted, if NPR doesn't see this as a crisis, I don't know what it'll take. Just letting you know, something's going down there, and it's not good. Okay, that's it for me. I'm now going to run out and get salt and toilet paper and hunker down because it's going to snow. I kid you not. God help us all. Be safe. Truly, be safe.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.